Victory Sedra. We have the tragic incident of the Chet HaEgel. Jewish people panicked that Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't coming back, and they went to Aaron and asked him to make them a power that would lead them simply in the place of Moshe Rabbeinu, and it turned into Avodah Zarah, where the Erev Rav took the Egel and said, Eil Elohecha Yisrael. They turned it into a deity, and they worshipped it and sacrificed to it or whatever. And this left a tremendous mark throughout Jewish history. How many people actually sinned by the Egel? The Torah says that 3,000 people were killed. And the Torah says that kishloshes alofim, about 3,000, like 3,000. So that even according to the simple meaning, that 3,000 people actually served idolatry and were killed, that is 0.5% of the Jewish people. Less than 1%, right? There were 600,000 Jews, men, so only men sinned, 3,000 of 600,000 is 0.5%. The Vilna Gaon says, really 3,000 people were not killed because they served the Egel, only 500 people were killed. That's why it says it was like, what's it called, only 600 people were killed. That's why it says it was like 3,000. Why like? He says because Kabbalistically, the calf, the golden calf, was a power they stole from God's throne. At God's throne, there's the shore and the eagle, right? The ox and the eagle and the face of a man around the throne, right? And the face of a, what was the fourth one? The eagle, the ox, face of a man. There's a fourth thing. Okay, whatever it is. In any case. So, The halacha is that if you steal an ox and you sell it or you slaughter it, you have to pay back 5 times as much. So if 600 people actually sinned and they were killed, but it was considered like paying back 5 times as much, so it's like 3,000. So according to the Vilna Gaon, only 600 people actually sinned with idolatry, which is 0.1% of the Jewish people. And to make it even more problematic, the Zohar says that every single person who was killed, who served idolatry, was from the Erev Rav. They weren't even from the Jewish people. They were from the Erev Rav. No full-fledged Jew actually served idolatry. If that's the case, then, and one second, let's make the question stronger. And when they came to Aaron to ask him, they weren't asking for a god. Elohim means a power. Elohim can refer to a judge, can refer to an angel. The word Elohim doesn't mean God. It means power. They felt that Moshe Rabbeinu was a power, an intermediary between them and God, and they needed somebody to take his place. And they didn't want to get another human being, some of them, for him say, because they saw human beings are too vulnerable. So let's have something made out of gold, which will be much more sturdy and lasting. So they wanted this power represented by the golden calf, but they knew that it was like a receiving station of spiritual powers, like a radio, that could lead them through the desert and take Moshe Rabbeinu. All they wanted was a substitute for Moshe Rabbeinu. And then it became distorted, and the Erev Rav made it into a God, into an idolatry. Okay. And that's why the Ramban points out that when they made it, the day they made the Egel, God didn't send Moshe Rabbeinu back and tell him, you know, go back, the people have done terrible things or whatever. It was only the next day when Aaron said, we're going to make a holiday to God, and I'm going to make you this Egel, and it'll take Moshe Rabbeinu's place. The next day, they got out, and they started eating and drinking and celebrating, and then the Erev Rav turned it into an idolatry, and they sacrificed to it and they bowed to it or whatever. That's when God said, go down, and the people have done a terrible thing and I'm going to destroy them. But not the day they made it, the next day. So why do you wait? Because in the beginning it wasn't that terrible. It was just they were looking for a substitute for Moshe Rabbeinu. It didn't turn into the ugly Avodah Zarah until the next day, and that's when the Ribbono Shel Olam got angry and told Moshe Rabbeinu to go down. So if that's the case, okay, then why did this leave such an impression that at the time God wanted to destroy the Jewish people and start again with Moshe Rabbeinu? What was so terrible? Right? What did they do so bad? And Chazal say that even though the sin of the golden calf was forgiven, but it was never forgiven completely, and every sorrow, every punishment that the Jewish people receive throughout history for sins that they do has a portion of the sin of the golden calf as part of it. It's a remain till today. Why? The way I just described it, even if Jews were involved, it was 0.1% or 0.5%. And according to the Zohar, no Jews were involved, just the Erev Rav. Why did this leave such a terrible mark? So the Sfarno says that the sin of the entire people was that they didn't protest. They let it go by and they didn't make any protest. And because they didn't protest, that's why they were held guilty. It wasn't the sin of the actual idolatry, because they didn't do that, or a very small, minuscule amount did it. But they didn't protest the ones who did do it.
Why didn't
they? So we'll see in a second. So that they didn't protest. Okay? Now, the Maral Diskin adds a dimension. He says, why didn't they protest? He said, because everybody thought that their neighbor also was part of this. And therefore they were afraid to protest because they thought it was just them that were okay, and everybody else was not okay, so they couldn't go against the whole crowd. But everybody, all the people who were kosher, were suspected that their neighbors weren't. So they didn't speak out. We'll see that this is also part of the same problem. So because they didn't protest, that's why the Midas HaDin, God's strict justice, really came down on them in a very, very intense way. You have to understand why. We find the same kind of thing in another place. It says that a good decree from God never was retracted except once. By the destruction of the first temple, okay, when God was... So he sent a malach to put a mark of blood on the heads of the Rishoyim, and a mark of ink on the heads of the tzaddikim. So when the malachim went to wreak havoc with the Rishoyim, they would know who the tzaddikim were and they wouldn't bother them. They wouldn't hurt them. Then the Midas HaDin came before God and said, why are these getting a mark of blood and these getting a mark of ink? So God said, because these are tzaddikim gemurim, these are fully righteous people, the ones with the ink, and these are fully wicked people. And I'm designating the wicked people to be punished and the righteous people to be saved. So the Midas HaDin said, they're such righteous people, how come they didn't protest when the wicked people did what they did? So God said, I know that if they had protested, it wouldn't have helped. It wouldn't have made any difference. So the Midas HaDin said, you knew that. They didn't know that. So why didn't they try to protest? Why didn't they try to stop the sin? And then God retracted, and he told the angel to put blood on all the foreheads, and all of them were punished. So you see the same thing. Because they didn't protest, right? They were tzaddikim gemurim. They were righteous people. They didn't do any sin. But because they didn't protest the sins of the others, God came on them so strongly. Now, I have to understand why. What is the idea of protesting, of rebuking somebody when they do a sin? What's it come from? So one idea is, it says, Hocheach tochiach es amisecha, rebuke your friend if you see that he's going to do a sin. Right? This is before the sin. Velo siso levcheit, and don't carry a sin because you didn't rebuke him. So one idea is that if you could protest a sin and prevent it, and you don't, then you're an accomplice to the sin. And on that it says, right, a person who could have protested and didn't is punished for the same sin because he's an accomplice. He is, to a good degree, a cause of the sin. Now, that is only where you could have prevented the sin. But what if you were to protest and it wouldn't help? The people surely wouldn't have listened. Then this doesn't apply. And it's clear from the Gemara in Shabbos, what I just told you. Because the Midas HaDin only had a problem with them because they didn't know that the people wouldn't listen. Only God knew that. But if they had known that it wouldn't have helped, they wouldn't have prevented the sin. Their protest would have gone on deaf ears. Then they wouldn't be held responsible for the sin. But there's still an idea to protest, we'll see. But you're not judged if you did the sin. So that can't be the reason why by the ego, because they probably wouldn't have listened. And it's pretty clear, because they Kor tried to stop them, right? He protested, and what do? They killed him. And that's why when they came to Aaron, he went along with them to make the ego and to stall them or whatever, because he realized that if he would have protested and stand up and say, don't do it, they would have killed him too. And then there would have been no kapara, because they would have killed the Kohen and a Navi, what's it called? And that, for that, there's no repentance. There's no forgiveness. So therefore, Aaron obviously showed that he held that they wouldn't help the protest. So you can't say the reason they were punished is because they didn't protest and therefore they were accomplices to the sin, because it wouldn't have helped. Their protest would not have affected preventing the sin. So that can't be the reason. So there's another idea. Okay, lifnei iver lo sitei michshol. Don't put a stumbling block in front of the blind. Don't help somebody do a sin. So by not protesting, you're helping them do the sin. That also doesn't apply over here, because it wouldn't have helped. Okay. Also, there's a Torah curse. Or ashelo yokin. If you can see to it that the Torah is observed by influencing other people, by protesting against other people, by giving mussar to other people, and you don't, then you are cursed with or ashelo. You could make the Torah be observed, and you didn't make it be observed. You're not making the Torah. You didn't establish the Torah. Here, the same thing. They can't be blamed for that. It wouldn't have helped.
Aaron.
What?
Aaron didn't do that.
Same thing. He knew also that it wouldn't have helped. Okay. Okay. So that's those. All of those reasons can't be. Okay. So there's another idea that everybody's called Yisrael Arevim Zebozeh. All Jews are responsible one for the other, and if one Jew sins, everybody's responsible. They bear the guilt together. Right? Jews are not individuals. We are all one entity. And if part of it sins, the other part is also held guilty. We're responsible one for the other. But according to the Zohar, that it was only the Erev Rav that sinned, so we're not responsible for the Erev Rav. It's only responsible for the Jews. So that can't be the reason either. Another idea is V'yohafta Re'acha Kamocha. Right? If you don't protest somebody doing a sin, you know that it's going to cause them harm. Then you are not showing love for a fellow Jew if you don't protest their sins, because it's like a guy taking poison and you don't say anything about it. So you're not showing your love. If you really love the person, you wouldn't let him take poison. And also the negative. Lo samad al dam re'echa. Don't stand by idly. If somebody is drowning, save him. If somebody is drowning in sin, don't let him drown in sin. Save him. So that also can't apply if it was only talking about the Erev Rav. That's only Re'echa. That's only your peer. But not the Erev Rav. We don't have a responsibility to save Goyim from whatever. Right? It may be a nice thing to do, but we have no responsibility for that. That can't be the reason that we're punished. There's another idea is that we have a mitzvah to eradicate evil from our midst. To be'ar tohara mikirbecha. So if you have an ability to eradicate evil and you didn't do it, then you're held responsible. But over here we said they didn't have the ability. They wouldn't have listened. They couldn't have accomplished anything. So, and also, there's another possibility, that by not protesting when somebody does something wrong, you are playing up to Rishoyim. It's called Chanufa, flattery. You're flattering the Rasha, right, by not standing up against him and protesting his evil. But the halacha is that if it's a danger to you, if you stand up to him, your life will be in danger, right? Or even maybe your property will be in danger. You're not required. You can flatter a Rasha if you know that not flattering him will put your life or your property in danger. So here, they surely were in danger. right? So Aaron went along with them, right? Because he was afraid they would kill him. And that was okay. So then you can't blame them either. All of them were afraid that, you know, who knows what they do. So none of these reasons could apply over here. So what is the reason? There's another reason, even if you know you can't accomplish anything. And you're not going to stop the sin. Okay? So none of the reasons that we mentioned apply. There's still an idea to protest. Not because you're going to stop the sin, because you shouldn't be affected. If you see somebody do a sin and you don't react, and you just take it in your stride, it affects you. And secondly, it looks like you are in agreement. Right? It looks to the outside like you're agreeing. And from the inside, if you don't protest, then what's it called? Then it's going to have an effect on you. Because you're going to see somebody sinning, and it's going to influence you. And the third reason, which is the main idea, is the following idea that the Brisker Rav says by a different case. When Paro wanted to kill the Jews, the Jewish children, so he asked advice from his three advisors, Yisro, Eov, and Bilam. Bilam told him, great idea. And he was punished in kind because he gave Paro the advice to kill Jewish children, and eventually Bilam was killed. In a war by Midian, he was killed. So he got his just rewards. Yisro got up and protested. And he said, there's no way that this is okay to do. And he ran away from Egypt, because Paro would have probably killed him, and he ran away to Midian. Because he protested, he was Zoche that Moshe Rabbeinu should be his son-in-law. Eov kept quiet. He didn't protest, and he didn't, what's it called, agree. He just kept quiet. So he was punished with terrible suffering. So the Brisker Rav says, I understand the Mida Keneged Mida, how Yisro got what he deserved. He protested, he got a reward. Bilam went along with it, he got killed. But why was there Mida Keneged Mida? Because Eov kept quiet, that's why he got suffering? Says the Brisker Rav, why did Eov keep quiet? Because he said it's not going to help anyway. Paro's not going to listen to me. So why should I waste my breath and protest? It's not going to help anyway. So therefore, the Rabban Hashem brought terrible pains to Eov, and he started to cry and scream in pain. God said to him, what are you screaming about? It's not going to hurt. It's not going to help. I promise you. You can scream all you want. It's not going to go away. He says, yeah, but it hurts. He says, that means when it hurts, you scream even though it doesn't have any effect? Then why don't you scream when Paro said he's going to kill Jewish children? Must be it didn't hurt you. That's what he was punished for. Same thing over here. You see people committing a sin, and you remain stoic, right? It means it doesn't hurt you. That means that you have some connection to that sin. Because if you would really be a person who has no connection to that sin, it would hurt, and you'd say something, even if it didn't help. That's what they were guilty of. The guilt wasn't that they were being punished for a sin, but God saw that there was somewhere within them that they were weak, and this sin had a place in their neshama. Even though they didn't actually do it, but it didn't hurt them when they saw somebody else do it. Now, what was the sin? The sin basically was breaking their direct connection with God and wanting to have an intermediary between them and God, which is Avodah Zarah. Avodah Zarah is, you can believe in God, but I believe that I can't go directly to God. I got to go through his son, his cousin, his uncle, or whatever. This star, that star, this angel, that angel. That is idolatry. Idolatry is thinking that you can't have a direct connection with God. You have to go through intermediaries. And therefore they felt that Moshe Rabbeinu was that intermediary. If he's not there, they need another intermediary. They wanted something else built in that place. And that's why it says that ultimately it led to adultery and to murder and to idolatry. Meaning, what is idolatry? Idolatry is spiritual adultery. For a woman to go after a strange man who's not her husband is the same thing as the Jewish people going after a strange power that's not God. It's having something in between them and God and not being true and faithful to God. It's unfaithfulness. And therefore, you limit and minimize God's connection with the world because you distance him and put intermediaries between. What's murder? Murder is diminishing God's, image in the world, because man's created in God's image. When you murder a human being, you're diminishing God's image. When you put an intermediary between you and God, you're diminishing his image, you're diminishing his connection to the world, pushing him out of the world. When you're unfaithful in when it comes to sexual things, right, it's also an idea of physically not having that faith. That could be, for that reason, the women didn't sin. Because the women were faithful women to their husbands, and from that they understood how to be faithful to God. But men at that time could have more than one wife. So that lesson they didn't have. So they were unfaithful to God, not because they were unfaithful to their wives, but because they basically didn't have that model to teach them that idea of faithfulness, of not having an intermediary, of not straying after some strange power. Now, this also, what I told you the Maharal Diskin said, that each one suspected that their neighbor was also in cahoots. So they were afraid to protest because they thought everybody was against them. They were the only righteous people. They thought everybody else was no good. The Gemara says, "Hachoshet b'ksheirim lo kebegufo." If I suspect somebody else wrongly, I get punished. Lo kebegufo. So the simple meaning is, it's wrong to give a Jew the benefit of the doubt. Why should you suspect them wrongly? And if you do, you get punished. But I think it's a much deeper thing. And the idea, I think, is the following. If I see somebody doing something suspicious, and I suspect that they're stealing, when I see somebody, suspiciously around somebody's house, and I suspect them of stealing. Okay, now, if they really are guilty of that, then what aroused my suspicion? Them. But if they're really not guilty, they're completely innocent. They're a gardener, right? The guy was looking for his yarmulke flew off, and he's looking for it in the bushes by somebody else's house. So why did I think that he is stealing? Why did I suspect him of stealing? You know why? Because I know that if I would have been in that situation, I could have stolen. So I'm projecting my fault to him. Because he's not the source of it, because he was completely innocent. So the source must be within me. And therefore, if I suspect that my neighbor harbors thoughts of idolatry, it means he's completely righteous, then something wrong with me. Because I'm transferring how I would have thought, by me it's possible, so I think it's by him it's possible, even though by him it's not possible because he's completely innocent. So it's transference. I'm transferring my weakness to him. Therefore, it's the same thing. By not protesting, I'm showing it doesn't hurt. That means that the sin is not that terrible, and that means it has a place within my neshama. Even though I didn't do it. But there's a weakness to it. I have a weakness, a weak point towards that sin. Therefore, I can suspect somebody else of doing it because it has its source in me. Same exact thing. That's why they didn't protest. So if it hurts, you protest. If it doesn't hurt, that means that you could have done that sin too, even though you didn't. But there's a place within you where you don't have that complete connection to God. That's the idea. The Rabban Shem said the Jewish people were meant to be a people who are connected to me. Boni Matem, we are God's children. We have that tremendously close connection. And if they don't have that connection, if there's a weakness, and you see in their neshamas as a place that they're separated from me, then there's no purpose for them. Then let's start again. Okay? So and that was the blemish that remained for all generations. It wasn't that we're being punished for a sin that we did, but it is the result of revealing that there's a weakness in our neshama, in its connection to God. Because if there wouldn't have been that weakness, we would have protested. It would have hurt. We wouldn't have been choshed the other people and felt that it doesn't help to protest because everybody's in this. And that's why, when did God get angry? When they got up the next morning and they saw the Erev Rav making this into Avodah Zarah, and they ate and they drank. They ignored it. It didn't bother them. It didn't upset their breakfast. They ate and they drank, right? And then they saw the Erev Rav committing adultery and murder. They killed Chur, right? And Avodah Zarah, and they just took it in their stride. At that point, the Rabbanu Shem said, it's not just the Eruvah. We can take care of them. We'll kill them, right? We'll execute them. But there's something wrong with the Jewish people if they could stand by idly and not protest this. And therefore, because of this, God told Moshe Rabbeinu, I'm no longer going to go directly with the Jewish people. I'm sending an angel to be an intermediary. Obviously, they can't function with me directly. Moshe Rabbeinu begged that God not do that. But Lamaisa, that would have been the result. They show they have a weakness. They can't have that close connection to me. That they are soft on intermediaries, because otherwise they would have protested. And therefore, Aaron, okay? Aaron had a very good reason not to protest, because he was afraid they would kill him, and it wasn't going to help anyway, but it gave the impression that Aaron was also for it. So even though he did it l'shem shamayim, so for part of the reason he got to be the Kohen, because he saved the Jewish people from destruction or whatever, but on the other hand, there was something negative about it too. So it says that when Moshe davened for Aaron, it helped halfway. Two of his children were not affected, but two were affected. And Nadav and Avihu, what was their sin? Their sin was that they felt they could make the decision of how to connect to God. Not that God makes a decision. They didn't feel that closeness that God is the one who makes the decision. We'll decide how we want to get connected to God, and we'll use whatever means we have, not God's means, our means. That's almost like making a golden calf, feeling that you need to make some kind of intermediary to connect you to God. They had to bring this Torah that God didn't command them to bring, right? This incense, and that was their sin. Where did they get that? Because they were influenced by their father, Aaron. Even though he meant it l'shem shamayim, they took it the negative way. So then the tefillah didn't help. That's why two of Aaron's children eventually died because of this, not as a punishment to Aaron, because of a result of the influence that they, the wrong influence that they got from what Aaron did. He meant it l'shem shamayim, but it appeared that he was soft on this too. That, you know, it's not so terrible to have an intermediary. And that's why part of the atonement for the sin of the golden calf, the Svarno says, was that they sent the Levium to kill the worshippers, and they didn't protest that either. In other words, you didn't protest when something bad was happening. Had you now protested, hey, what are you killing these people for? That would have been terrible. But now they stood by and they didn't protest that. That means that they had an affinity towards killing these people too, killing the idol worshippers. They didn't only have an affinity to the sin, they had an affinity to the fixing up of it also. That helped to atone. And also, that's why Moshe Rabbeinu broke the Luchos. So one idea is that the Jews didn't feel a pain in people separating themselves from God. But here the Luchos are our connection to God. They're Luchos HaBris. Bris means a covenant, a bond. These are the things that bond us to God, and Moshe Rabbeinu broke it. And the bond is broken. Now we felt terrible. So if you feel terrible over the bond being broken, it helps to atone for not feeling terrible of seeing people serve God through an intermediary. But I think there's even more to it. What was their mistake? They thought that Moshe Rabbeinu was the one who connected them to God. Okay? And therefore they felt, in the absence of Moshe Rabbeinu, we need somebody else to connect us to God. Moshe Rabbeinu showed them, not only don't I connect you to God, but I'm going to break that connection between you and God. So don't put your stock into me that I'm the one who connects you to God, because I'm going to show you that I can break that connection between you and God. So don't give me the stock. Look at the Rabbeinu Shalom, not at me. Right? I can be the person who destroys that connection by breaking the Luchos. So don't, they gave too much power to Moshe Rabbeinu. Take a little bit of that power away. In fact, somebody told me, I don't remember his name, told me when I was in the States, he told me a nice pshat. I'll say, I can say it in his name, I don't know who he is, but whoever he is, I'm saying it in his name. I forgot his name. He said, that's why Moshe Rabbeinu's name is missing from last week's Sedra. Because the sin came because they put too much of their trust, and they thought Moshe Rabbeinu was too important of being an intermediary between them and God. So before the parsha of Kisisa, which is saved in the golden calf, the Torah minimized Moshe Rabbeinu's name is not even there. He's just another you. Don't get carried away with Moshe Rabbeinu's. We don't need intermediaries. Moshe Rabbeinu only teaches us how to get closer to God. He's not an intermediary between us and God. And therefore, this parasha before, Moshe Rabbeinu's name is left out. In any case, and that's why also, after the sin of the golden calf, we had the 13 attributes of mercy. What does that mean? We're supposed to emulate. God is merciful. He's patient, and he's chanun, he's gracious, and he's rachum, and he's merciful. He feels the pain of others. You should have protested and felt the pain of what these people were doing, right? You should feel empathy with others. If they're sinning, feel the sin. Don't what's it called, be stoic and apathetic, right? You have to, and God also, when it's necessary, is pokeh avonav sabonim. He cleanses the people who do tshuva. If you don't do tshuva and you do a sin, then he punishes that sin. There's a reaction. God reacts with mercy when it's necessary and with punishment when it's necessary. That's what we have to learn too. You can't just be apathetic. You have to react. If it bothers you, you have to say something, right? If there's a sin going on, you have to protest it. You have to react to it. And if there's other people that need mercy, they need to be taught and taken away from the sin. If that's possible, you have to do that. You can't just be apathetic. And that's the Yud Gimel Midos Shel Rachamim. So that's part of the atonement of the sin of the golden calf too. With all of this, I want to explain a Gemara. The Gemara says like this. The Jewish people said, after they were exiled, right, what's it called? They said to the Navi Yirmiyahu, right, Vayomer Vatomer Tzion. Tzion said, Ozavani Hashem, God has abandoned us. Vahashem Shechani, God forgot us. He put us into exile. He's abandoned us. He no longer has a connection to us. So the Navi answers them and says the following. Hatishkach isha ula, can a woman forget her child? Marachein pri bitna, a woman who has mercy on her, on the fruit of her womb, can a woman forget her child? Masha from there, the father could, but the mother can, right? Can a mother forget a child, right? So what's it called? Gam eila tisha, even if it would be possible that could be forgotten, anochi lo eshkache, God says, I could never forget you. Meaning my connection to you is a fact. I created you as my children. I can't forget you. Okay, so the Gemara elucidates this in the following way. The Gemara says, the Jewish people said God forgot us. So God says, it's impossible, I can never forget you. So Jewish people said, well, if you can't forget us, then you can't forget the sin of the golden calf either. And God said, Gam eile tishochachna. No, that I can forget. Eile Elohecha Yisrael. That they said, these are your God. Eil Elohecha. Eil I can forget. So he said, if you can forget that, then maybe you'll forget the giving of the Torah too, that we accepted the Torah. No, v'anochi lo eshkachech. But anochi Hashem Elokecha, that I can't forget. That's just the simple meaning is that you'll remember the sin, but then you'll forget the sin, but then you also forget our merit. God says, no, the sin I can forget, the merit not. But the way that it's described is difficult. Because Eil Elohecha Yisrael is not the sin the Jewish people did. That's what the Erev Rav said. It was their sin. So why is the Eila, Gam Eila Tishachach, I can forget the Eila, fine, but that's nothing to do with their part of the sin. And Anochi is not our merit. That's what God said. We said Nasa V'Nishma. Somehow it should have made, not Anochi, the Anochi I can't forget, the Nasa V'Nishma I can't forget. Why is it what God said and what the Erev Rav said? I think what it means is the following. God said, my relationship to you, right, you are a people who, because of your avos and imahos, have inherited an neshama that is totally connected to me. Okay? And therefore, I can't forget you. So the Jewish people say, yeah, but lemaisa, we did sin and didn't protest the sin of the golden calf, which showed that there is a separation between us from our side. So maybe that also you won't forget. God said, no. Gam Eila, that wasn't part of your essence. That was how you reacted to what somebody else said. Eila, they said this is your intermediary, and you didn't protest it. Okay? that that means that it's not part of your essence, it's just a blemish in your essence. But Anochi, when I gave you the Torah and I said, I am your God, that is your essence. That can't be forgotten. That's your essence. But the blemish to your essence, which is only how you fail to react, that can be forgotten. That's what the Rav Moshe was saying. Your essence is not being separated from me. That's only a blemish. Your essence is being connected to me. That's Anochi Hashem Elokecha. That's your essence. The other one is only how you fail to react. That's not your essence. That's just a blemish to your essence. That can be corrected. That can be forgotten eventually, right? With the right kinds of atonement. But the essence of you is having that connection with me. That's what the Rav Moshe is saying. I can never forget you because your essence is connected to me. I, at periods in history, you showed a weakness in that essence, but that doesn't change your essence. It just made a blemish, a side blemish in how you reacted. It created a blemish for all time. But it's possible to correct. That can be forgotten. What? So that was corrected. Every time that the Jew sins, so part of the sin is that I'm distancing myself from God, right? I don't have that connection with God. So where did that come from? From the lack of response by the Chet HaEgel. You showed you had a weakness towards separation to God. So that caused all the sins of a connection to that weakness. So part of the atonement is the atonement for the sin of the golden calf too. And that's why it left a blemish. It wasn't a punishment. It was just that we had a weakness in our makeup that needed to be eradicated and strengthened, and it took throughout Jewish history to do that, and still going on. But that didn't affect our essence. Our essence still is that connection to God. There's a side thing that affects it, but it doesn't change it. That's what that Gemara means.